Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Tonight there's no co-host, no Mikey, no Chris, no Maddie, no anyone from the consulate with me tonight here by myself. But I have a guest, and I have a great guest tonight, and we're going to be taking callers, but we have a very specific topic tonight. It's estate planning or elder care planning. I got my good friend Raj Goyle with me tonight, and he'll be taking your calls. And if you don't call in, I'm going to just ask him questions that I'm interested in. But if you've got specific questions on estate planning, in other words, wills, or somebody's passed away, or you know, you need disabled parents and you need to take over their finances or their healthcare decisions, or if you're worried about how you're going to keep this money to last for the rest of their life if they're going to a nursing home or something of that sort, this is where Raj comes in. That's what estate planning and elder care planning is. Estate planning is, you know, making sure that the assets go where they're supposed to go and taking care of parents who are disabled, or being able to pay for all those long-term care bills for the rest of their life. And even if they run out of money, that they'll still be paid for. And, you know, if you have questions on any of this, Raj is here. It'd be a great time to call in, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And there's lots of different things that you may be thinking about. Matter of fact, actually, tonight, I just signed my new estate documents in Florida. Because, you know, you can't, we'll ask Raj about that when we get him on the line. Anyway, Raj, are you there?
I sure am, Drew. Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to a good hour together.
Hey, buddy. So, you know, here I am. I moved from Maryland to Florida. I had Maryland documents. I had a very extensive state plan in Maryland. Those documents technically should work in Florida, right?
Well, there's two ways of answering that.
You're a lawyer. I wouldn't expect anything less.
Always have to equivocate. So, you know, there's this concept of reciprocity, that one state's laws will recognize that of each other, meaning that most states have a law that say that if your estate plan was properly executed to meet the formalities of the state that they were generated, that the state that you now reside in should, and that's the key word, should recognize it. But now we get into maybe some more practical considerations. So, for example, a good example would be the medical directive, a very common document, a very important document, that I think we all appreciate. But as we all can also appreciate, every state has a different set of laws in terms of the formality. Some states just require an individual just to sign the document. Some states require a signature with two witnesses. Some require a notary public. So the requirements are quite different throughout the country. And the last thing you want is presenting a medical directive in a medical emergency, and the medical staff, who are accustomed to seeing nothing but documents that comply with that state's laws, they're not the ones that are going to say, well, we understand reciprocity and how states recognize each other under the U.S. Constitution. They're going to say, well, this doesn't have a notary, and we're not going to recognize it. And here, at the very moment you need this plan to work, you have a problem.
So, Roger, there are some attorneys that say, well, when we sign a document, we sign them such that they're executed as no matter what state you're in. Is that a sound thing to do?
Well, no. A lot of times, that's one of the questions we oftentimes ask is, you know, is there a possibility of you moving? And we try to incorporate the formalities of the state that the client may be apt to move into to try to get ahead of some of these more practical issues. But at the end of the day, you know, when you go to that new state, we oftentimes do recommend conferring with an attorney that's knowledgeable about the laws in that state. I just kind of gave you one example, but there's different tax laws. There's different formalities. In some states, you want to avoid probate because the fees and process are much more onerous than places
like in Florida.
Yeah, and Florida is a prime example. Lots of times people come and talk about, should I have a revocable trust? You hear about ways of avoiding probate. And while there's pros and cons, we can have an honest conversation around that issue. Probate in Maryland is not the worst thing in the world. But in Florida, it is very onerous, and it's designed really to enrich one person. That's the lawyers, because the fees in Florida are just so over the top.
Yeah.
But in Maryland, not so much.
So hold on with me, Rod. We're running out of time in this first segment of the show. I just want to tell our listeners again, I got my good friend Raj Goyal with me, and he's a top-notch estate attorney, does elder care work also. And if you want to call in and ask your question about estate planning or elder care planning, about your wills, your advance directives, your powers of attorney, whatever, revocable trust, he's here to answer them for you. 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. And we'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question: yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here on an open show, sort of. But our specific topic is estate planning and elder care. We're here with my good friend Raj Goyal, and he'll answer any question for you about estate planning and elder care. And Anita will let me know if we do have any callers. And if we don't, then I'll just continue to ask Raj questions. Raj, you know, one of the things that a lot of people ask me about the advance directive. So the advance directive is dealing with health care. And so, you know, I'll talk about, you know, hey, your children are now 18, 21, something like that. They're single. If there's a medical emergency, you know, are you going to be able to have the proper authority to do what you want to do and get the information you need and so forth? And their thinking is, well, we're the parents. Or, you know, I'm the brother or sister. I'm the closest relative to them. Our parents have passed away or whatever. What is the truth about what happens in a medical emergency if you don't have an advance directive? And let's say you're the parents or the spouse, or, you know, how much authority do you have without an advance directive?
Yeah. Again, that's why it becomes so important for young children when they go off to school or move out of the house to get advance directive, because like you correctly noted, at the age of 18, they're an adult. And at that point, they're considered to be on their own two feet, and privacy and confidentiality does not allow medical staff to always provide medical information in the event of an emergency. And a lot of times, parents find out the hard way that they're precluded from getting access to information, being able to make decisions. And, of course, just like you said, they think they have all the rights as parents, but that's more ends at the time of 18. Now, some states do have provisions that automatically give a default some parents. But again, that's not something that we would routinely rely on. The enforcement and how medical personnel whether they're even knowledgeable about that can vary. And the last thing you want is the child, again, going through a difficult time, not able to communicate. That's where having those documents that specify specifically that I appoint my mother, my father, my parents, my guardian, whoever it may be, to be able to make my medical decisions becomes an indispensable document. And it's one that can easily, you know, can be obtained. And, of course, back to our earlier point, think about, you know, a lot of times the kids maybe, you know, grew up here in Maryland, but now they're going to school in South Carolina. They're in school in Florida. So, again, back to the earlier point that you and I were talking about moving across state lines, we oftentimes recommend that that medical directive be compliant with the state where the school is located to ensure that we don't have the problems that you and I just talked about a few moments ago about state law.
Hey, Raj, we have a caller, Lee in Towson, and we'll go right to them. Bring them on, Anita. Lee, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go for it, my friend.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I bought a piece of land in Florida thinking about building a house on it. And since you mentioned they have high probate fees, is that a situation where you should seriously consider like a revocable trust for your assets? Or...
So you still own the lot is what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, I own the lot, and I haven't built on it yet. So.
Okay, and you're worried that if you died, somebody would have to go down to Florida, pay a lot of fees to get it probated and so forth. So, Raj,
well,
what would he do?
I'm thinking about moving to Florida, but what can I do to avoid? Should I make a revocable trust if I move to Florida?
Raj?
Yeah. So in a situation like that, if you're still a Maryland resident, Maryland, you know, most of your assets will be subject to the Maryland process because you're still a Maryland resident. But Maryland law will not apply to real estate that's outside of the state of Maryland. So in this example, Lee, your lot will be subject to the probate process, assuming it's titled in your sole name, there's no beneficiary and whatnot. It'll be subject to the Florida process. Again, it'll be a process. It'll be a court process to get the assets, or get this, in this case, the lot, properly distributed. If you want to streamline that process and avoid the time and the expense of dealing with the court process in Florida, one option would be to have a revocable trust. But many times I kind of refrain from going down that route because revocable trust can add a layer of complexity and cost to the plan that a lot of families just would rather avoid at this time.
One of the things I think he's asking you, Raj, is, though, he's thinking of moving to Florida completely.
Okay.
So should he do the
okay.
revocable trust anyway and assume that it's just going to be part of his plan when he's here in Florida?
Without knowing more about your financial situation, but I would say that I would seriously consider having a revocable living trust-based plan now in anticipation of moving to Florida. And that way, when you finally move and become a full-time resident in Florida, then you'll get more of the benefits that the revocable trust offers for the reasons we talked about under Florida. But I also want to mention that there's sometimes other ways of avoiding probate. Doesn't always have to involve a living trust. There
right.
is a way, sometimes they're known as life estate deeds, sometimes known as ladybird deeds. And it's a way of owning real estate but adding a beneficiary. Much like you would add a beneficiary to a life insurance, you can do the same thing for real estate.
Right.
But it would require a new deed, and that way you still own and retain full control and ownership of the property. But because there's a beneficiary, the beneficiary will automatically become the owner of the property upon your passing, and that way it will be an easier way of avoiding probate. So once we find out more about, Lee, your situation, the complexity of your plan, and what you're trying to achieve, those are the different options we would consider. And if you have a more simplistic situation, I may opt to look at other alternatives to the revocable trust, but with the right fact pattern and the right profile, a revocable trust may be a very good concept for you to think about as part of your overall estate.
All right. Thanks, Lee. Good call. Good question. So if there aren't any other callers online, Anita, I'll just go back to asking Raj questions. You know, but Raj, what you just said is a great point, because there are too many attorneys out there that they just want to do a revocable trust because, I'm going to be honest, I think it's all about fees to those types of attorneys. A good attorney should do exactly what you did, is say, yeah, revocable trust is a good option, but there are other options that might be more feasible for the simplicity of your situation.
Yeah, and that's where it just becomes important that an estate plan is not a matter of just, you know, calling an attorney and just saying, these are the documents, and voila, you have the documents. It really requires a lot of thought about what your goals, what you're trying to do. It's also timing, Drew. I find a lot of times, especially a lot of my younger couples, will come in thinking that they need a revocable trust for any number of reasons. But when you start telling them about the complexity and the cost associated with it, and the fact is there's a good likelihood at least one, if not both, members of that couple will be around in another 10, 15 years. They've already told me they're going to move. They already told me they're going to do A, B, and C. They're going to change jobs. They're going to get this account. They're going to sell their business. And there's so many life changes. So a lot of times we opt to say that even though a revocable trust may be a good option, maybe it's just not the right time. And as they get older and as their financial and personal situation become more solidified, then at that point, when the realities of life and someone passing become more real as they get older, then it might make more sense. But that, I appreciate you making mention of that, because that really to me is the secret sauce about estate planning, is really having those dialogues and those discussions and really bouncing off to really find a plan that's most conducive and frankly most comfortable.
Right.
So even though I can make an argument that something is worth your while, sometimes it's just best to punt because you're not ready for it.
Hold on for me, because I got to take this hard break at 29, and we're going to come back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. Talk more with Raj Goyal, 410-922-6680, if you want to ask a question.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with my good friend Raj Goyal, who is an estate attorney, elder care attorney, and as he answers the questions here, he's proven that he's the kind of attorney you want. He doesn't just have everybody has to do this. This is how I make the most amount of money. He's going to actually sit down and figure out what's best for you in your specific situation. But Anita tells me that a couple people called in and asked for my email address. And I guess they want to ask me a question without going on air, and that's fine. Easy way to do that is drew@drewtig.com. D-R-E-W-T as in Tom, I-G, Tignanelli, that's my last name. And so drew@drewtig.com. That's my email. Easy way to get in touch with me. But they also ask for all your information, Raj. How do people get in touch with you? What do they? Where do they call? And, how can they find out more about you?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Certainly you can give me a call. My phone number being 443-738-1516. Or you can send me an email and go to my website. My email being rgoel, R-G-O-E-L, at offitkerman.com, which is offitkerman.com.
Rgoel at offitkerman.com. There you go. And you'll give that phone number out at least one or two more times before we're finished tonight. I don't think there's anyone online, so let me just continue with the questions we're asking. And our caller Lee earlier, if he did a revocable trust and you knew that he doesn't live in Florida yet, but he's thinking about it, that would be one of those situations where you'd want to make sure, well, how do they execute documents in Florida? And then you would probably have them execute them both for Maryland and Florida if they're not the same.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so, Florida is certainly known for its nuances when it comes to, you know, how documents get executed. A little bit more complicated, I would say, compared to Maryland. But that way it ensures that you can avoid having to, you know, do a plan this year and then turn right around next year, move to Florida, and now have to incur, you know, a second set of costs and hassle of having to reengage with another attorney to kind of redo the work, which could have been done, you know, efficiently by trying to combine the state laws.
Yeah, so, you know, and there are a lot of people who are thinking of transitioning, and so, you know, you need to make sure that you think it out wisely, and don't put it off either, you know, even if it might be a year from now you're moving to Florida. If you don't have estate documents in Maryland, don't assume that you can just do them a year from now when you get to Florida, you know, so that's very important. So, Raj, what's going on in the elder care business? So let's say somebody is married and they have maybe $500,000 in total assets. And next thing you know, one of them needs a nursing home and they're being told that it's going to cost $120,000 a year. And the healthy spouse is seeing their whole life financially pass before them. What kind of things can a person do in that situation?
It's unfortunately it's been coming more and more common. I think, you know, COVID's really had a real impact upon our elders and healthcare. And so when this scenario comes up, you said the person who's living at home, you know, whether it be the husband or the wife, are worried about the cost of a nursing home, which is, you know, easily, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $13,000 a month. But they also hear about another program called Medicaid or medical assistance. And they say, well, gosh, I would love to be able to get on that program because I hear that if you qualify, you know, the state's going to cover just about all of my care, or in this case, my spouse's care, and I'll be able to, you know, not have to spend on all that money. And they're like, well, too bad I have too much money. And that's where I sort of surprise people to say the laws are designed in a much more liberal way than you realize. And so what ends up happening is that there's a lot of options that would allow, in the scenario that you described, Drew, for me to protect just about all, most if not all of the assets for the benefit of the spouse who is living at home, the healthy spouse, the community spouse as we use in our terminology. And so the laws are designed, these are called the spousal impoverishment laws, that the state says that, you know, we can't require a husband, wife, a married couple to spend on all of the assets because what will that do to the one that's living at home, the community spouse? And so from that standpoint, there's a lot of assets that are automatically protected right off the bat without me doing anything, but with a little bit more planning, oftentimes, you know, it's what we call a spend down, and that's where we have a lot of options. Which can allow us to protect, as I said, just about all the assets and qualify the spouse who's living in the nursing home for Medicaid immediately without worrying about the five-year look-back period. You know, a lot of people think, well, oh, gosh, well, if something happens, I needed to do it in advance. But this planning is something that can be done literally at the 11th hour. And literally, if they've done no planning whatsoever, it's still not too late to pull the trigger on this planning, and as I said, it just makes for just a really good result where you can take care of the needs of the spouse who has medical needs, but still protect the assets for the benefit of the healthy spouse who oftentimes has a very long life expectancy and is worried about needing to have the financial wherewithal to be able to live out their days.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Raj, that when you're a married couple and you have one spouse going into a nursing home, there is a tremendous amount of assets that can be protected. And I would just want to make sure our listeners hear that you said it at the very beginning. Most people who are married and they have maybe $500,000-$700,000 of assets, they think that they have to be broke down to like no more than $2,000. And they think that they had to give everything away 5 years before or something like that if they want to be approved. But that's not true with a married couple, right?
That's exactly right. And it's not something, you can't find that on the internet. Most nursing homes don't know those laws or not familiar with those laws. And so just getting that little bit of information, and I really do recommend that when someone's going through a situation like that, and you don't have to be married to there's a lot more options available to a married couple in the scenario that you described, but if you have, let's say you're a child and your surviving parent, a father, mother is going into a nursing home and perhaps has a couple $100,000, a lot of people think, well, I'm in that same boat. Unfortunately, those options that Raj and Drew talked about are already just for married couples, but while they're not maybe the same options that we're talking about for a married couple, there still are options, even at the 11th hour, perhaps not as powerful. So I really do commend to the listeners that when you have a situation and you're going through a health crisis or, you know, yourself, a spouse, a parent, really to obtain good legal professional advice, because you just don't know what you don't know. And
right.
With an hour consultation, you start realizing, my goodness, there is so much I can do, and what a better result I can have for my family as compared to where I thought I was. And unfortunately, a lot of people just go about their day and they go about spending the money and paying the nursing home because they think that's the only option they have, just to come out to find out later that they could have done something differently with the same outcome from a medical perspective. And let's be clear, and I think this is important, we're not so focused on the money. We're not so focused on protecting the money that we're going to be sacrificing the quality of care for our loved ones. That is unacceptable. That is not anything that we would be so focused on. You know, getting into a good nursing home, that's an art in itself. But once you're on Medicaid, people think you're going to be relegated to some terrible nursing home on the other side of the state, and you're never going to see your loved one ever again. It's nothing like that at all.
Right.
It's the same quality of care. And so I want to make sure that people are clear, you really can't get the best of both worlds. But again,
right,
it really comes down to that professional advice.
They say, Raj, that the way that you get the best care in a nursing home is visitors.
Yeah. At different times, different days. And
yeah.
The old saying is the squeaky wheel.
It's not the amount of money you spend. It's visitors. And,
right,
you know, if you're in a good nursing home, you could be spending all the money in the world. But if you're getting only an occasional visitor every so many weeks, months, or whatever, you know, there's a good chance that you just may not be getting the care because somebody else is coming in screaming, like my sister. My sister is laying into those people probably right now up in Harrisburg, and they're probably saying, oh, man, how long do we have to put?
Very important. And you hit it on the nose, Drew, and that becomes very important with staffing shortages and staff turnover. You know, you hear it in the news and all industries, and probably the most hard hit is the long-term care industry. And so it really does require families to take good heed of your advice, because that's the only way to get the best care for their loved one.
Right. We're going to take another pause, but we're here with Raj Goyal about estate planning, elder care. You have one quarter of the show left if you want to get on air and ask your question, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with my good friend Raj Goyal, and we have two callers online. We're going to go right to them, Raj, and we'll let them lead the conversation. Kathleen in Baltimore County, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, go for it, Kathleen.
I have a question about what happens to you in a nursing home when you have no one to come and visit you. Do you leave something to encourage people to come? Someone?
Well, I can answer that in a couple ways. You know, obviously, you know, if there's no sort of friend support network, you know, a lot of times my folks that fall in that same category oftentimes become friends of the families of, you know, roommates and people that are next door. And that's sometimes why going back to our planning that we talked about before the break, about protecting assets. A lot of times this is not about protecting assets for the sake of protecting assets and giving someone an inheritance. If we're able to help and protect assets and have money on the sideline, it allows us sometimes to hire a care manager, a care aide that can stop in and be a surrogate family member to kind of do like Drew said, to pop in periodically, unannounced, so that way to be kind of your eyes and ears. And so that's why a lot of the planning is overlapped with some of these more practical considerations.
You have a lot of clients, Raj, that hire caregivers to come into the nursing home also.
So that would be some of the options that we would try to implement in a scenario like that.
Okay.
All right, Kathleen?
Yes.
Also, befriending the staff never hurts.
I know.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Good question. Very good question. We're going to Lauren in Arnold, where I used to live. I used to live in Arnold. Where do you live in Arnold, Lauren?
I live off of College Parkway.
Yeah, I used to live off of College Parkway. I lived in Olmsted.
Yep, that's right around the corner.
You in what, in Bay Hills?
I'm sorry?
Are you in Bay Hills?
No. I'm in a development called Harding Farm.
Oh, yeah. That actually went in right before I was, like, the last year before I moved out of there. So that's a nice community. Anyway, what can we do for you, my friend?
Well, I have a question for you. I have some managed brokerage accounts, and I have TOD, I don't know what you call them, TOD benefits.
Right, transfer on death.
Yes, transfer on death. So, you know, I have someone named as for, you know, on these accounts that should transfer, you know, on my death.
Right.
So, but my question is this. They're also mentioned in my will. And I read recently that even if there is a TOD, if an account with a TOD agreement is mentioned in your will, then it is treated like part of your estate and has to go through probate.
Raj?
No. So a transfer in death, just to be clear, is adding a beneficiary to a brokerage account. And so under Maryland law, the terms of that beneficiary designation will trump the terms of a will. So even if you have specific reference to that account, the fact of the matter is that if you have a transfer on death account, again, a beneficiary being designated, whoever is designated in that beneficiary designation will receive the account at time of your passing. But again, that, but there's also a practical consideration. And so one of the things I would suggest to you is that, you know, Lauren, if you have a situation like that, that you have a TOD and you have something that may be contradictory in your will, always be a good idea to maybe update your will.
Yeah.
Make sure that everything is more consistent. So that way we don't give any potential arguments or ambiguities, notwithstanding what I just said. The last thing you want to do is cause confusion among family members, friends who may not be as conversant about these legal concepts. It just gives better clarity. But at the end of the day, from a legal perspective, the TOD designation will prevail, notwithstanding the terms of your will.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a Supreme Court ruling on that about 5 or 6 years ago, right, Raj? And they put this to rest once and for all. They said, if you have a beneficiary designation, that's a contract. And that contract overrules the will, period. End of the story. And that was the Supreme Court's ruling. Very clear. And they say, we don't care if you can prove that it was the wrong one. Get it right or don't put it down there at all.
But it might be a good idea, based on what you've told me, to, and I need to update my will anyway. It's been, oh gosh, it's probably been 8 years since I've looked at it. But to make sure that any reference to these accounts, that is taken out of my will.
But here's an interesting thing. I do a lot of estate work with Raj. I don't think, Raj, I have ever seen you mention in a will a specific investment account. It's just not normal in a will.
It doesn't happen very often.
Okay.
So whoever did that, I would be curious about what that estate attorney's doing.
Okay. All right.
Now, all right.
Thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it very much.
Good. Good call. Good question.
Great question.
Thank you. Take care. Raj, we got about 4 minutes left. Why don't you give everybody out how to get in touch with you again? Remember, when you say your phone number, you got to say it twice because they might get part of the numbers, but they're not going to get them all.
Okay. So the phone number is 443-738-1516. Again, 443-738-1516.
Okay, and your email?
And it's rgoyle, R-G-O-E-L, at offitkerman.com, which is offitkerman.com.
rgoyle at offitkerman.com. Well, that's fantastic. We only have a couple minutes left here. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about on elder care, just real quick, and a lot of people don't know this, but let's say you're single, and let's say you have a child, and let's say you have $700,000 of assets, and you're worried that if you go through these assets, what are you going to leave that child? Because that child happens to be disabled, and maybe they're not terribly mentally disabled or something of that sort. Maybe they're not special needs, but they're on Social Security disability and they don't have a lot of assets and they're not going to accumulate a lot of assets. Yeah. There's an incredible opportunity going on there, right, Raj?
There is. You know, back to the policy, normally you have to send out all of your assets to qualify for Medicaid. But from a public policy, the state says that, you know, if you have a disabled child, it wouldn't be fair to spend on all of your assets because we know that that child is most likely dependent on the parent who's about to go to the nursing home. And so one of the exceptions, normally you can't just transfer all of your assets to a child and say, I'm broke, take care of me. But that exception actually does apply under the facts that you described. So when you have a disabled child, you can transfer the asset directly to them, literally at the 11th hour, right when I'm going to the nursing home. And let's say you move the whole $700,000 over, and now you're impoverished because you've moved everything to your disabled child, you will immediately qualify for medical assistance, so you meet all the other requirements, no questions asked. And that transfer can be made either outright, There's also ways, because you're concerned that the child may not be able to manage money, they may be taken advantage of, there are ways of transferring, getting the same result, using a certain type of structured special needs trust that will allow to get that same benefit to qualify for Medicaid, still protect the assets, and still preserve the benefit that the child may be receiving or may need in the future that may be dependent on how much money he or she has. So it's something that a lot of people just don't realize, but it's a wonderful policy option available to protect, you know, children with special, unique needs and making sure that they'll have the wherewithal to have the standard and quality of life that you want for them.
Raj, we're out of time. Every time I have a great guest like you, time flies. And so I just want to thank you.
Great being with you.
It's a great pleasure to work with you always. Anyway, Raj Goyal, and if you want to get in touch with him, rgoyal@offitkerman.com. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Things are gonna be much better.